Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello and good evening and welcome along to the Week 12 flagship show here at 5 Yard Rush. As I have been recently, will host you through this. No Murph today. Murph is on somewhere else. I'm joined by Liam. Liam, how are you, sir? You well?
Yeah, not too bad, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
No, no trouble. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to hearing your wisdom. As people may see, Liam is at Dolphin Abroad. That may give you some insight into Liam's team there, right?
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I bet you're more willing to come on now than you was maybe 3-4 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, not too bad. 4-game winning streak. I mean, we're facing pretty soft teams, to say the least, apart from the Ravens, maybe. But yeah, you know, it's all good in Miami now.
So, I mean, before the season, just quickly on the Dolphins, there was a lot of talk about looking at the playoffs and being hopeful of that, and it didn't start out too well. But I guess now you're not a million miles off. Is that still something that's achievable, do you think?
I mean, the AFC division in general is a bit of a, or conference, say, sorry, is a bit of a mess, to be honest with you. So, never say never. I mean, in the next couple of weeks, we've got fairly easy games. Obviously, the Giants this week coming up, who, to be honest, don't look amazing after their performance at the weekend. I mean, 500 is definitely achievable. Playoffs, we'll see. I think there's still a lot of work to do with the team, but it's good to see the defense finally get back to its form of last season, which I'm sure we'll talk about in here.
Well, if the Patriots can still top the AFC East, then there's hope for everybody, right?
I guess so, yeah. If the Patriots are going to have a rookie, then for sure.
And the NFL just can't shake off the Patriots. I don't know what it must be like being a team in the AFC East. Just, you must be sick of them.
Well, I mean, I was kind of hoping once Brady left that, it'll go downhill. But I was wishful thinking there about a check seal there.
Yeah, it seems that way. So, as ever, guys, just quickly to let you know, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all good other podcast apps, YouTube, etc. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram is at 5 Yard Rush. And as ever, I'd just like to thank our guys and our friends at Manscaped, who are the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming. They want you to look your best with the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. It's the best technology for the greatest balls of all time. When you're near the end zone, make sure you use the right tools for the job and choose Manscaped. 2 million men do worldwide. And obviously, if you check out their website, manscaped.com, and use the code 5YARD, you get 20% off and free shipping, which is not to be laughed at. So week 12 is in the bag, Liam. What did we learn from week 12? What caught your eye?
Well, I mean, I think the main thing for me was starting in Miami was Carolina's absolute demise, to be honest. I read my articles on DraftKings slate this week. I kind of thought that CMC would do quite well. But unfortunately, of course, he got injured. But unfortunately, they were just terrible. I don't really know what happened. I mean, obviously, Cam Newton, you know, had a pretty successful start back into Carolina, and then this week he gets benched for PJ Walker, who we all know PJ Walker isn't very good. It was really interesting. To be fair, apart from against wide receivers, the Miami defense has really got back to form, as I mentioned earlier. You know, they're pretty much a top three defense now, fantasy wise, in the last 4 weeks against all positions bar wide receiver. So they really have stepped up, and that's probably why we're winning games again. You know, the offense is never really the issue. Tua was never really the issue, and people seem to love to hate on him. But yeah, the defense, especially the secondary, is really stepped up. And obviously with rookies like Javon Holland getting takeaways every other week, a bit like David Howard just did last season, you know, it was a fun watch, to say the least, as a Dolphins fan.
I mean, we get to this kind of time a year or a week or two ago, and we're looking for, in fantasy terms, that league winner, that one guy you can find from nowhere that's going to do it. Jameis Winston went down, and there was a lot of talk about Taysom Hill maybe doing it. Hasn't quite panned out, and Trevor Siemian's holding that role down. Cam came back, in his first game back, he had 2 snaps and a rushing and a throwing touchdown, and suddenly the hype was there that Cam's going to be this league winner. And, well, Cam couldn't win anything. Let's be honest, I think at one stage on Sunday, he had 4 completions and 2 were to his own team and 2 were to the other team.
So. Yeah, I mean, look at this. In the playoff schedule, it's pretty rough. You know, they've got the Bills, the Bucks, and luckily they play on week 17 again. But again, even the Saints aren't exactly the easiest matchup. So yeah, I mean, anyone looking at Cam Newton as a league winner was definitely scraping the barrel, to say the least, at quarterback anyway.
No comment on that one. Thanks for that, mate. Hey, there's times in fantasy, as you know, where you have to scrape the barrel and hope you get lucky, and that's what it's all about.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So, yeah, I took a punt here and there, and I'll be putting that one down to experience, I think. So, but, I mean, while we're on Miami, we saw another guy that's, I don't know, consistently under-delivered this year in Myles Gaskin suddenly find a bit of form.
Yeah, it's about time. To be fair, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Ockhamed. You know, I feel he's definitely more talented than Gaskin in terms of a runner. Right. He's just not had the opportunity to really show that. But yeah, no, it's good to see Gaskin do well. Is it the answer long term? Probably not. But hey, listen, I think he benefited off a pretty positive game script in the end. And of course, with Cam Newton, as you said, you know, not doing very well. Yeah. I mean, it's good to see him do well. Who knows if he'll do well next week against the Giants. I mean, the Giants have been pretty good against the run. It's usually the air you can get to them. But yeah, I mean, I say it's always good to see Gaskin do well because the coaches have seemed to like him. So yeah, hopefully he can continue that going forward.
And I've spoke before as well about Tua maybe underperforming throughout the year. And I think a lot of that is because you didn't have a run game that would ease the burden on him and a bit of pressure on him. And obviously he had a decent game at the weekend. And I think that comes from Gaskin also delivering a little bit.
Yeah, and to
your offensive line, maybe.
Wait, actually making a block and not being a turnstile. Yeah, that would help. Yeah, I think we saw a bit of London, actually. I don't know if you went to the London game, but I think we saw a bit of it in London, you know. Oh, okay.
I had the joy of the Jets Falcons. So,
I went to both, luckily. So I saw both catastrophes on the field. But no, I think we saw the London game with Gaskin. He broke off on a few runs, and that, I said, you know, that helped us do it quite a fair bit. And to be fair, we have seen Tua this season do it without the run game. But as you highlighted, you know, with it this week, you know, he was absolutely excellent. And that's no real surprise to any Dolphins fan that watches him week in, week out. Next up is the defensive line, which would be nice to get over the next couple of seasons. But yeah, I think everyone benefited off luckily Cam Newton and the Panthers just handing us a win, which is nice of them.
Do you think Cam Newton will recover from that, both for himself and the Panthers, and also for fantasy terms? Is he still an option, or is that it now?
No, I think he's still an option. I think he's still an option. You know, with his rushing ability in the end zone, I think it's like 6 touchdowns in three games this season now. Mm-hmm. If you include passing and rushing, so I think he's definitely an option. And whilst he has got tough matchups in the Bills, Bucks, and Saints in the last couple of weeks, you know. Yeah. I think people, I think he's startable over many, many quarterbacks in the league. It's just, I think Miami's one of the defenses you're going to have a tough time going up against at the moment. They're just in the form of last season. And of course, last season was how good they were. Buffalo, for me, you're going to beat them through the running game. So when they do play them, obviously Cam is a big part of that. And whoever the starting running back will be now that Christian McCaffrey's out for the season, whether it be Abdullah, whether it be Hubbard, who knows? But yeah, he's still a big part of the offense. I wouldn't be dropping him, but I definitely wouldn't be saying he's a must start for sure.
It is mad, isn't it? We're living in a world where we'd sooner start Tyler Heineke and Trevor Siemian over Cam Newton. Who'd have thought that 3-4 years ago, right?
Oh no, tell me about it.
Shocking. Something else you highlighted from week 12, Jalen Hurts, I believe.
Yeah, it definitely hurts to be a Hurts fan.
It does.
Fantasy wise, he used to be terrific, but on the field, he's terrible. I don't know what he's suffering from. Is it bad coaching? Is it just his receivers, apart from Devontae Smith, being absolutely garbage?
Jalen Reagor certainly didn't help him out to do this week.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a few memes around Jalen Reagor this weekend, that's for sure. I don't know. I mean, to lose to a team like the Giants, who literally have no offensive weapons apart from Saquon Barkley, is pretty impressive, to be fair. I think he had 77 rush yards in the end, Jalen Hurts, which, you know, it's pretty standard for a mobile quarterback to get these days, especially when you can't throw the ball to anyone. Just really poor. I don't know if it's a lack of, a bit like Tua last season, that if it's a lack of weapons, or it's just the coaching being terrible. I suppose we'll see in the offseason coming up.
Again, a bit like, to a certain extent, Hurts was one of these that divided opinion in the fantasy community quite a bit coming into the season in the early weeks, I think. Will he be at the Eagles next year, and is there anything to do with him? But I think his mobility made him a reasonable option. And I say, through, I don't know, probably 10 weeks, I think it was QB3 or 4 or something through 10 weeks, something like that. So he certainly delivered. Is it a blip, do we think, or...?
It's hard to tell, you know. I think it's just some people are pulling their weight. I don't, you know, because Quez Watkins, we usually associate with someone who can make a big play here and there, but he isn't always consistent. Obviously, as I mentioned, Jalen Reagor's just disappeared off the face of earth, seems to get the snaps, but didn't do anything with them.
They let Zach Ertz go, obviously.
I mean, I wouldn't... Ooh, that's tough. No, I wouldn't personally. It's a bit like Cam, you know, with rushing ability. I mean, it all depends on who's on your roster for fantasy terms, you know.
Yeah.
If you've got, say Tom Brady, and he hurts your QB too, I probably would still roll out Hurts just because he's got the ability to score 20 points so easily just through his legs alone.
Yeah.
But if you're relying on him as a QB1, absolutely no chance. I'd be looking elsewhere if you could. And if you're in a 12-team league, for example, there's a high chance that there's someone on the waiver wire who's got an easier playoff schedule coming up if you're in the playoffs. I'd be looking to bench him in that situation. Listen, Jalen Hurts is got potential to score 20 points every week. It's just recently that he hasn't the past couple.
I mean, they've got the Jets next week, so you could well put us all to shame.
You'd like to think so. As season's shown, it's hard to trust anything at the moment.
And then a playoff schedule of Washington Giants, Washington, which is not the friendliest quarterback playoff schedule to have.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll get on to Washington later, but their defense has been certainly improved in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, and he obviously hasn't delivered against Giants this week, so that'd be a shame there. Talking to Washington, they play tonight, right?
They do, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing how certain players get on, particular Antonio Gibson, a player who, the past couple of weeks anyway, has had a bit of a resurgence, to be honest, in the preseason, which looked a bit difficult for him. You know, I think snaps-wise, he's up about 20% from the previous 3 weeks. I think he's seen like 13 red zone attempts, which again is what you really want for your running back, especially against Seattle, who are a renowned, really bad defense against running back. Admittedly, you know, not as bad as they have been in the past couple of seasons, but, you know, still fairly bad compared to the rest of the league. And, you know, with him seeing about 60% of the RB touches, McKissick isn't eating too much into his workload compared to what we've seen before. So, yeah, I think my biggest surprise from one of them anyway, from this weekend, is if Antonio Gibson doesn't absolutely smash it this week against Seattle, who then themselves are looking to bounce back a bit. And I think someone like Tyler Lockett could have quite a good game this week against Washington defense. Yes, they are improving, but, you know, they're still susceptible to a big game. And, you know, with the pass funnel that is Seattle, either one of Lockett or Metcalf's probably going to have a good game.
You'd have thought so. I mean, Gibson for me is someone I was extremely high on coming into the season. I said just the other week on here to Rich, I swapped him for DeAndre Swift straight up pre-season.
Oh, wow.
Which might not have been the best of moves. And we got to Tampa a couple of weeks ago, didn't they? Gibson had a career high of 24 carries. Okay, only got 64 yards, but 2 touchdowns. And it looked like that was the game we'd all been waiting for him to have this year. And then, I say last week it was 19 carries, 95 yards. Okay, didn't get a score. But what got me last week was he didn't have a reception. He didn't even have a target last week.
Yeah, and I think that happens sometimes with McKissick being there. You know, he is, at times, you know, as you just highlighted there, the exclusive, you know, guy at the backfield getting the routes and getting the catches. But I feel, based on what you just said there, he's due. He's due a game, he's due some receptions, due some touchdowns. And I think the game tonight, which unfortunately I won't be staying up for, but I'll definitely be watching in the morning, is the game to which he's going to get that. And, you know, so my recommendation is if you've got Gibson, definitely start him and play him in DraftKings for sure.
Yeah, and it's one of those as well that, game script on that one tonight will determine a lot of Gibson's usage, I guess.
Oh, of course,
if they get in front and get ahead early, then Gibson should be a big factor. If they fall behind a score or two scores early on, then you may be struggling to see very much production from him.
I mean, and that's always going to be a worry with, the majority of teams in the league, but I do like Washington chances tonight. You know, Heineke is a very explosive player, and Russ has had his struggles, obviously come back from injury, and that Seattle team is, I think, suffering from a bit of the season's over syndrome. I think it's a good guess anyway that the season's going to be over. So yeah, I like Washington chances tonight.
And is their season over, do we reckon? Or can Washington still mount a challenge in this one?
Oof, I think there'd be a push, especially in the NFC. Yeah. If they're an AFC team, I think they've probably got a chance, a bit like Miami do. But, you know, I think it could be quite a fun game tonight. Two teams just going for it. And that's when Heineke's at his best, to be fair.
So that the 5 and 6 is the last playoff berth at the minute. The Washington at 4 and 6. So a win tonight keeps them in that hunt. And I think there's worse 5 and 6 teams in there. You know, the Falcons are probably the worst 5 and 6 team I think I've ever seen.
The Falcons are an interesting team. I mean, it's hard to predict what they do, but to be fair, with Washington, the last sort of 5 games are all against teams around them. Like obviously the Eagles, which just struggle a lot. The Eagles are terrible. New York Giants as well, they're playing, who aren't very good.
Cowboys twice as well, I think, haven't they?
Yeah, there's a chance. I mean, Dallas obviously need the wins themselves to get a decent seed, but there's definitely a chance.
Well, very interesting stuff. So, main thing from week 12, what did you spot fantasy-wise that can help us out?
So, the main thing for me was that I always thought the Titans would be screwed by Derrick Henry.
Yep.
Obviously, he was lead rusher at the time, absolute freaking nature, basically, the running back position.
Yep.
And, AJ Brown being out also now, I thought they've really struggled to actually get offense going. And against New England as well. Although New England have been recently given up quite a lot of yards to running backs, I thought, there's a good chance that New England's run basically absolutely pummel the Titans. But we saw Dondre Hilliard and Devontae Foreman actually put up some decent game between the both. They both had 100-plus yards. Of course, Hilliard had that massive breakaway run. And it's really interesting to me. They both split carries and snaps, to be fair. I think it's like 50-50 snap wise. So it's a bit like the Browns in terms of their like dual threat running back. Hilliard was the more nippier player, a bit like Kareem Hunt, who could catch passes but also break into gaps, whereas Form was more of your Derrick Henry type, just run at them and hopefully break a few tackles and get clear. It was a really interesting game to watch. I was more on the Mac Jones side of things in terms of how, he seems to be doing pretty well. And in terms of Belichick coaching him well, and he's got a pretty kind schedule coming up to him as well, so he could be a interesting player to watch. And of course, he's got to play the Bills again, which could be an interesting game. But the Titans running backs for me were the most, I think, the key things to take away. And of course, some of them will be available on your waiver wire this week, and that could be a huge pickup for your playoff schedule coming up.
I've just said, look, Dontrell Hilliard in redraft, according to Sleeper, is only 46% owned.
Wow.
So is that somewhere you'd be looking to target perhaps now?
I think you have to, especially if you're in deeper leagues. I think that's an absolute must. And of course, with it potentially being your last regular season week, or even if you're in the playoffs right now, I think I'd be spending a good 80-90% of your whatever you've got left
is the key.
Yeah, literally, right? Whatever you've got left, spend on Hilliard. I think I'm looking at him as Cross Fishbowl this week, him and another player, which I'll speak on later, in terms of what I'm spending on to get my last week to try and secure my playoff spot.
On that then, while you're out there, Scott Fishbowl, how are you doing?
I am doing okay. I think the start of this week I was top, so I was guaranteed a bye. Unfortunately, I'm going to lose this week, which is a bit unfortunate. I'm about 8 points behind, and the guy's got Tyler Lockett to play tonight as well. So I don't think I've got a chance there. Considering I think Tyler Lockett's going to do well as well.
You might be okay for Lockett, right?
Oof, yeah, it's asking a lot. The next week's going to be pretty big for me. I'm second in points. So, yeah, it's going to be close. I should get through to the playoffs, just about. Yeah. So that's why I'm so keen on the waiver wire this week, because I need to pick up some players who are going to help me.
It's incredibly impressive. I have won my first game this week. I am now 1-11.
I'll tell you what, that's not my Warrior Bowl squad. My Warrior Bowl squad 1-11, I think, about to come up. So I joined you in your 1-11.
Yeah, I got obliterated by injuries even before the season started.
Yeah.
Looking at my division, it's incredibly tough. It's evenly split for everybody, but they've just killed me. And hey, I've enjoyed it. I've met some people, I've learned from it. But it hasn't been a successful venture at this stage.
My first season was pretty abysmal as well. Your second season, if you get in for second season, is miles better than your first, so it's good to know for you if you get into the second
time. I went with a lot of Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley stacks. I went with J.K. Dobbins. So it's been a painful experience. There's not a lot you can do, is there? That is life and fantasy.
That is fantasy football this year especially.
Well, there isn't anybody that isn't injured at the minute, to be honest.
I mean, not really, no. It's a big blow for me losing Debo this week. He's part of my main stack in sort of Fishbowl, so losing him is pretty big, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, other injuries note, just quickly, I'm sure we'll pick up on them. Christian McCaffrey looks like he's done for the season now. Debo's picked up an injury. Dalvin Cook's potentially got a dislocated shoulder, I think I read earlier. So there's a lot of niggles around. Even those guys that have avoided the injuries are now getting injured.
Yeah, it's tough season.
It seems that way. And I'm sure we say it every year that this feels like the worst year for injuries, but this year does feel like the worst year for injuries.
Surely it can't get any worse than this, surely.
Well, I've looked at some of my IRs on some rosters and I'm like, it weren't that bad when we had a global pandemic. You know, people were out left, right and centre, and I've still got more injuries this year than I did last at times. So it's not been fun. It's been tough, but it's been tough. So is there anything you noticed from week 12 or any sort of trends going through the previous weeks that you as a player yourself and the people listening can try and keep an eye out for and monitor?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's quite a few, to be fair. I mean, I'll start with some players that I felt, you know, have to come back. So Kareem Hunt was a big one this week. Of course, activated off IR. Always interested to see how he eats Nick Chubb's work from his 12th week back. And, yeah, it was pretty significant. 38% snap count on the week. I think Chubb had about 50% of total offensive snaps anyway. But more importantly, he had a 41% of running back touches. So that's pretty typical of what you expect from Kareem Hunt in the backfield. So, yeah, I mean, Nick Chubb has been a brilliant option to go to, especially for daily fantasy, but also fantasy football if you had him on your roster. Yeah. So just be good to be wary now that Kareem Hunt's back. And obviously with how much the Browns run the football, you know, they're both going to be eating to each other's work. So, yeah, it's something to note going forward, especially with your playoffs coming up. You know, you want to have best roster on the field available. A player who was questionable heading into the week, Elijah Mitchell. He is back and he is the RB1, as expected, really. 91% RB touches to San Francisco. So Jeff Wilson is fully back to the bench, as expected, really. You know, and Elijah Mitchell had a brilliant game also. And that was expected also, to be fair. So yeah, I think Elijah Mitchell, he picked up from waiver wires. I know I did in a few leagues when he was going pretty much start of the season. I think 60-70% of my fab on him. And yeah, I think while he's not been as consistent as I'd like him to be, I feel like he's been a pretty shrewd pickup. And typically, whenever San Francisco running back comes up on the waiver wire, I'll be getting straight at them, to be honest.
Do we think going forward, especially in more dynasty type games, that Mitchell retains that role going forward? Most that back or...
I mean, Raheem Mostert is a very talented player and I dislike Mitchell more. I think he's more of a bell cow. I think with Mostert, clearly it's played by this past week. I think Mostert is more of a Kareem Hunt type, whereas I think Mitchell's more of a Nick Chubb type. And I'd rather rely on the Nick Chubb type than I would a Kareem Hunt type, if that makes any sense. I think he's a bit more reliable, a bit less injury prone, as we've Well, maybe apart from him being questionable this week, we've kind of seen this season. And I think San Francisco this season have just been, even with the whole Jimmy G or Lance situation, I think they've actually played really well. Considering the injuries they've had, which seems to happen on defense every single season. And they could, who knows, they could make a playoff push. You never know. I mean, they've got the schedule isn't too bad. We'll see.
And with Debo potentially injured, then they've been using him in a lot of, I don't know, not trick plays as such, but certainly using him in different ways and different formats. So, and carrying the ball from the backfield as well. So Mitchell there potentially could benefit from Debo's injury to some extent.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think also a player who's going to mention later, I think I'm adding of in my fantasy league is Juwan Jennings. I think he's going to be a massive, massive ad this week. And I think he's going to go under the radar also. I think it was 37% snap share last week with obviously Debo being there. So the fact that Brandon Ayuk could be elevated to the RB1, probably mean Jennings will be elevated to the RB2 and probably take over either Debo's role or even Ayuk's role. And I think Jennings has seen a pretty decent role with both of them there anyway. So the fact that he's going to elevate himself up to a more significant role than he did is quite a shrewd pickup. And I'd spend a decent amount of fab on him as well. If you don't get a Madison or a Hilliard, I think Jennings is a pretty good substitute.
Juwan Jennings, look at the world we live in these days. It's absurd, isn't it? Hey? This one surprised me. We have a little sheet we work off, but this one surprised me. Brandon Cooks.
So I'm going to go on the record and say that Brandon Cooks is now... on the record, you can quote me on this. I want to say Brandon Cooks is now droppable in softer fantasy leagues. So when I mean softer, I mean like, say, 8 to 10 team leagues where, you know, there's, say... Oh, I don't know how to put this. So I say 8 to 10 team leagues where there's plenty of options on the wire. So say there's like a, I'm trying to think of a player who'd be on the wire that you could potentially pick up instead of him. But because I don't want to say like a Jennings, because Jennings would be, I think he'd be available most leagues anyway.
You take Juwan Jennings over Brandon Cooks right now?
I would, this week anyway. Okay. I don't know. Brandon Cooks' target shares dropped off massively since the bye week. I think it's down to 14% now. And it was at like a 20-25% rate previous to that. And I don't know if any of you watched Houston last week against the Jets. I mean, God help you if you did. They were absolutely terrible. Tyrod Taylor, I don't know what he's doing back there, but I think it'd be better off Davis Mills is playing there, to be honest, which I didn't think I'd say at the start of the season. And if that does happen, to be fair, I think that could help Cooks quite a fair bit. But yeah, at a 40% target share for, I think, the draft capital people are drafting Matt this season, I just can't let people play him. It's just doesn't seem enough warranted and of how bad Houston are. I think he's dropped from soft fantasy leagues this season. I wouldn't be starting, that's for sure.
I think Cooks, the line in the draft, especially around draft time, was that he's going to be the wide receiver one there unless Nico Collins emerged and somebody has to catch the ball. They're going to be behind probably a vast majority of the time. Someone needs to catch the ball, so why not take probably the best person at doing it? And you're right, he did start out targets 14, 11, 13. He's had double figures numerous times. Coming back out of the bye 2 weeks, he's had three targets and five targets. He did get a score this week, which probably helped if you started him in fantasy, just kind of level out that sort of projection score per turn. His schedule's not that bad. Colts next week, he's got the Jags coming up. They've got Seattle and the Chargers. They're going to be behind in those games. I mean, Derwin James will probably follow him, so you probably don't want to play him there.
But... yeah. The thing is, to me, I would much rather have someone like Kendrick Bourne the rest of the season than I would a Brandon Cooks. Because I think at least with Kendrick Bourne, Belichick's actually going to use him in creative ways. And actually, it was all we saw past week or two touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he's been involved, actually, like a wildcat previously and passing the ball, things like that. At least he's involved in the offense. Whereas Brandon Cooks, actually, you've highlighted a target share there and the actual targets he got. You know, he's just not reliable. And I think especially now you need reliable options, and I'd rather have a Kendrick Bourne than a perhaps tougher matchup on a week who's actually involved in an offense where, you know, the coach would actually want to use him properly, unlike a Houston where yes, they want to use him, but there's some talks of him being traded and he's just not getting the targets that unfortunately he needs to win you matchups and win you leagues.
Yeah, I mean, Kendrick Bourne, I think, so wide receiver one of the Patriots for this season, which is incredible stuff. So we spoke a bit about injured running backs. Now you've got one who's feels like he's consistently injured and hasn't quite delivered, but Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I thought it was quite an interesting one. Saquon's quite an interesting one. Obviously, all the talk about New York Giants at the moment is they're losing weapons. Golladay's not living up to his potential. Slayton. And yeah, you know, Saquon's ultimately, you know, thriving from that situation. He had 17% target share last week. Admittedly, Daniel Jones wasn't the best. But, you know, you can't get much worse than what he was.
It doesn't matter how big your target share is, it depends on the side of the ball, right?
Well, potentially. I mean, but the thing is, we've seen good games, Daniel Jones. I know some Giants fans will just hate me saying that comment. But yeah, we have seen some good games, Daniel Jones. And when Saquon's getting like a 86-87% snap count for the week, and he's running like 24 out of 34 routes that he did see, you know, it's hard to ignore that. And as we said with the Houston side, someone's got to get the football. And if Golladay's only going to be targeted five times a game, and that's a good day, then I think, and Barkley's typically closes targets to Jones, you know, week on week and play on play. I think he's got to be playable. And yeah, he did do much with his production last week and his actual volume last week. Nah, probably not, but there'll be easier matchups, I think, coming up that he could probably do that against.
That's what gets me. I mean, the receptions, if you're in a PPR league or even a half PPR league, are great from someone like Barkley there. It'd just be, that's not why he's in your lineup. You're in his lineup as a running back. I mean, 13 carries for 40 yards against an Eagles team. You'd probably expect a bit more from him. He's only top, 57, 51, 52 is the most return he's had this year. He hasn't had a plus 60 yards game.
Yeah,
especially with the draft capital spent on him, right?
Yeah, I say that's fair. I think you've got to look at it in the context of that. You got easy matchups coming up. So, for example, Washington, people say Washington, I do think they're an improved defense these past couple of weeks, despite their losses. But they're easy to run against some teams they have been playing, because like the Eagles are known to be quite a robust defensive team against the run. Whereas Washington, they're actually losing guys on the line, and I think they're bottom eight at the moment in terms of the last couple of weeks in terms of points allowed to running backs. And potentially the Cowboys have played the Cowboys a few times, and they're okay against the run. They're not amazing. Yeah. So the opportunity is there for Saquon, and I think I'll always back the talent over the situation. And we've seen that with Denver a lot with Tim Patrick, who, people have said he's rubbish, and clearly we've seen his new contract and how he's been playing. He's quite good. I think with how it's going, I think Saquon will be fine, and especially the Chargers coming up also. And I said, I said Miami is a difficult game.
I was waiting for it, because you mentioned his game coming up, and you mentioned the Chargers, you mentioned Dallas, you mentioned Washington. I'm like, they're at Miami next week.
Yeah, Miami's an interesting one. I'm still not 100% convinced by them. In terms of the run defense, especially. Yeah. But I still back the talent. I still think against teams like the Chargers, and again, I said the Bears in Washington, I feel like he'll be fine.
I mean, if you've got him, you've got to play him anyway. Let's face it, right? You can't.
Exactly. You spent what, second round draft capital on him? I think you've got to play him, even the first.
Yeah. It's just a shame that, there's a lot to spend out on someone who hasn't quite... It feels weird. It feels ever since Barkley entered the league, we're just saying he hasn't quite lived up to expectations for four years now. I know the injuries have had a huge part to play on that, but I guess some of it's the Giants organisation as well.
Yeah, it has to be. And luckily, Valencia Gettleman's out the door soon, so that could help him. But just look at what he's around. I mean, I don't know. I think many people couldn't do much in that situation, to be honest.
No, most definitely. You mentioned defenses a couple of times. You've got points on defenses you want to bring to us.
Yeah, so just obviously from being like an avid DraftKings player and daily fantasy player in general, I'm always looking at like recent weeks in terms of how defenses are performing compared to season long, because season long after the first couple of weeks is, I don't want to say irrelevant, but it's a lot harder to trust it, because as we've seen with Miami recently and Washington recently, teams change, defenses change throughout the season. I like to work off a four-week basis. So in this case, it's weeks 9 to 12. And what we see from weeks 9 to 12 at the moment is that the Las Vegas Raiders defense are giving it up everywhere. And I mean everywhere. So not only are they the second worst defense overall, they're the third worst against quarterbacks, fourth worst against running backs, the fourth worst also against tight ends, and the eighth worst against wide receivers. Now, to be fair, they've played some pretty high-powered offenses, obviously Dallas, Cincinnati, but I don't think that matters. And of course, we've seen that of all the, obviously, things like Gruden and other players on the defense, there's been a bit of turmoil with the organization in general, and they haven't really recovered from that just yet. So I think going into... As to the fantasy players coming up soon, I think Las Vegas are going to be a team that people target and target heavily these last 4 or 5 weeks for sure.
As in trying to get out. I mean, we spoke about Gibson earlier. Gibson's got him next Sunday, so potentially there's another nice matchup.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful.
And then I need to see if I can swap him back for DeAndre Swift.
Well, I mean, I like Swift as an RB1 this season from, I think, June, July. So again, it's talent over situation. He's such a good player, and luckily for us, Dan Campbell has prioritized running the ball over anything else, so that helps situation a lot, doesn't it?
Is it any surprise Dan Campbell wanted to play physical old school?
Not to voice people, definitely not.
I was going to say, since the second he walked up to that podium in that very first press conference, I think everybody knew what was expected and coming of him, right? So, so basically you're saying target anybody playing the Raiders. If you've got a debate on a flex choice or something like that coming up, if it's someone playing the Raiders and someone not playing the Raiders, you're leaning that way right now.
Yeah, so long as they have a significant role in the offense in terms of like they're getting a decent snap count and they're on the field, I would play them over that, yeah.
Fair. Miami defense is coming back, so that's one you'd probably look to avoid, especially against wide receivers, correct?
Well, it's the opposite. So Miami the past 4 weeks. Yeah, it's all right. So I'm here to explain my notes. Yeah, so Miami have been a top three defense. Funnily enough, actually, I'll say this point now. The top three defenses in the league, according to Fantasy Points, are all from the AFC East.
It's because they play each other and each other that bad.
Potentially. Yeah. But yeah, you got New England first, Buffalo second, then Miami third, as we're getting onto here. Okay. Yes, so Miami, apart from wide receiver, is a top 10 defense against all positions at the moment. So the 10th against quarterbacks, then 9th against tight ends, and they're the best team against running backs at the moment. So the best team in the league. But they are 29th against wide receivers.
Wow.
So that to me says they've turned into a bend don't break defense. So they give it up to the likes of whoever on the outside and inside in the slot. But they're getting better in red zone, which is, I think why the Panthers probably struggled. You know, see, like DJ Moore had a big play against them, but didn't really get into the end zone. So, yeah, I think they've changed the defense up a little bit, and it seems to be working. So, you know, let's carry on.
And that sounds very much like my own Tampa. Fantastic run defense, secondary, corners we've had a lot of injuries with as well throughout this year as well, which hasn't helped. But, wide receivers, fantasy-wise, coming against the Bucs, it's probably not a bad matchup for most of them, to be honest. Could be behind in the game. Running backs are struggling. And I think we're one of the worst against tight end as well. And that continued this week. So, yeah, it's not fun. But injuries, we've touched on a few this week. New York Jets last week, I think, ruled out Michael Carter to IR.
Yeah.
Where do you see the Jets with their situation now at running back?
This is a frustrating one for me because I have a bit of Ty Johnson. I have done since preseason, and I thought, Ty Johnson will, if Mark Carter's gone for 3 weeks or so, Ty Johnson will be the running back one. And then I see that Tevin Coleman gets like 60% of snaps and even more touches than that, and he dominates everything in the running back room, which is quite annoying. I think it's fair to say that he is the RB1 for the Jets now with Michael Carter and IR. Mm-hmm. Which is a bit surprising. Obviously, we've seen the talent of Tevin Coleman on San Francisco. He was always injured. He didn't really, unfortunately, didn't really get the opportunity there. But yeah, so maybe Tevin Coleman is the RB1 there. Admittedly, against a really bad offense with Zach Wilson throwing shovel passes to the backs of his running backs. But yeah, it's something to note that Tevin Coleman is probably the guy there now with Michael Carter out.
I mean, I came into the year thinking Tevin Coleman might almost started RB1 and lost it in the year, but he didn't, did he?
Unfortunately not for you, no.
Don't get me wrong, I haven't got a lot of him. I just thought with the experience they've got on the Jets team, with the youth of Zach Wilson and things like that, I thought they might have given him that starting role almost, that lead back position, but they didn't. They went with Ty Johnson and Michael Carter made a role in there, but
yeah,
they seem to be, which seems strange. They seem to be leaning towards Tevin Coleman now that Michael Carter is going to be out, rather than keep running that Ty Johnson sort of youth aspect. And you know what you're going to get from Tevin Coleman. I think Ty Johnson's still got a lot to show and prove what he can do.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, he showed it a lot this week, so fair play to him.
And even Austin Walker got some snaps of the score this week.
Right? Out of nowhere. Yeah. Even Jets fans are like, who the hell's this guy?
Well, you've got a 24% snap share. 9 carries, so I don't know how much he's added. He's on 0 rosters.
I wouldn't be adding him.
It only takes a Tevin Coleman injury and Austin Walker could win you the SFB, mate.
I mean, that is a shout. I mean, luckily my RB room is pretty intact there, so not too bad.
Good, because there's not many of them.
That's there, luckily, yeah.
The next point you've got is, I'm going to make you say it on record again, time to drop. And who are we dropping now? We've already chucked Brandon Cooks on the scrap heap.
Yeah, so two players. One of them, I suppose, is a bit more surprised than the other one. Hunter Henry is the one that I think you should be dropping now. Johnny Smith's back. 57% of snaps. And I think what I got with the Smith v. Henry thing is that I think Belichick just likes Smith more.
Okay.
And it's a bit like with Kendrick Bourne. You know, Jacoby Myers is getting all the yards and all that, but Kendrick Bourne is ultimately getting the big plays and the touchdowns. Yeah. And that's what you need in your fantasy leagues to, you know, win your matches, as we talked about earlier. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, to be fair, Hunter Henry still got 68% of the snap share last week. Or he played 68% of the snaps out of the 100 that, you know, New England saw in the win. But I think for me, the appeal of Hunter Henry was that he had no competition, no real competition anyway. So the fact that Smith's back and getting a near 60% snap share is a bit worrying. For me, Hunter Henry is completely droppable. And a player you can replace him with, if you're looking for a tight end, is James O'Shaughnessy. O'Shaughnessy, there we go. I said it the right second time.
Following Dan Arnold's injury?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, he saw an 81% snap share on the week. And I think we've seen in the past and right now is that, you know, Jaguars is like targeting the tight ends. It's been a thing for years. And if he can avoid injury, I think O'Shaughnessy is a brilliant play and a really sneaky one that most of your league won't really be onto. So I think this applies also for deeper leagues like the Scott Fishbowl, for example. I think you could probably pick him up for nothing. And who knows, if he gets a touchdown, especially in tight end premium, you're loving life.
Yeah, Dan Arnold has killed my DFS for the last 3 weeks running on his own single-handedly. So I keep expecting big things from the guy, and it keeps, you know, I think one or two, and it just hasn't delivered from there. But Hunter Henry surprised me. I'm just going to go back to that because he had a 68% snap count, which is where he's been most of the year. I mean, he's got a couple of 79, 81s, but that sort of early to mid 60s is generally where he's been. The weekend he had 5 targets. Well, he's got a 6 and an 8 in there, but other than that, it's the third highest target share he's had during the year. He's also quite prolific when it comes to touchdowns. I mean, he's got 7 touchdowns through 12 weeks, which is a pretty decent return. I'm surprised that he was there as a droppable option for you.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe to be fair, it's because of, I just think Smith's a better athlete in general.
Okay.
And to be fair, this is, I think, maybe it's part of this week because I think this week is the first real week we've seen Smith actually take a prominent role in the offense.
Yeah.
And I do think for me, this puts me off Henry. I think that, I said earlier, I just think there's better options out there. And New England's schedule isn't the kindest either, really. And I think there's more chance of Smith having a bigger play than there is Henry. I think for me, Henry's a bit one-dimensional, whereas Smith's a bit two or three-dimensional. If you want to keep Henry, that's fine with me. I mean, but I just think that, you know, Smith's a better option going forward.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's different, and that's what this is about, right? I mean, Jonnu Smith, I'm talking now. The 57% he got is one of his most, but he's been down in the 20s and 40s. He's got 4 targets, which is one of his most, and Hunter Henry outperformed both of those. He's only got 1 touchdown on the year, Johnny, as well. So I'm not joining you on that one, Liam, I'm afraid.
Well, that's fine. I mean, in other words, saying Johnny Smith is due snaps and touchdowns. So
I'm going to check all my leagues and see if I can swap Hunter Henry for Johnny Smith for you somewhere down the line.
Unfortunately, the trade deadline's maybe in Dynasty. Yeah. I think you'll agree with me on this one, though. I think you'll agree that Jamison Crowder is droppable.
This came up with me and Murph about 3 weeks ago, I think. Jamison Crowder had a really decent game, and he mentioned it. We come back the following week, and I went, see, you can't quite. He's one of those now that he's going to go,
yeah.
Just going to give him another week and just see if he is going to be an option. And no, he's not an option, is the easy answer.
Unfortunately not, yeah. No. Yeah, I think Elijah Moore's going to turn to this league winner that everyone wanted to draft but didn't. And he's going to have like a pretty big game, so it's going to win people matches and things like that. Unfortunately, Jamison Crowder, I think it was his 1 target and 1 reception last week. Yep. With Zach Wilson in the center. I think he's done for the year.
So Crowder's going the way of Robbie Anderson a couple of weeks ago, I guess, and Brandon Cooks, you reckon, now as well. So
unfortunately, yeah.
Fine. The next guy you've mentioned on the list here is someone me and Murph spoke about quite a bit last week. Najee Harris suffering from negative game script.
Yeah, I think we saw Harris's like touches being like the 20 pluses for quite a few weeks. And obviously that's really good for us because I drafted him in quite a few leagues. He was playing really well. And then, yeah, the past couple of weeks have been a bit of negative game script. The Big Ben's been okay, but not great. Especially last week, he was pretty bad. And yeah, we've seen, as a result of that, Harris's touches have gone right downhill. I think it's down like 6 or 7 touches the past 2 weeks. So yeah, all that high draft capital and people like me spent on him is now being thrown in the bin. And yeah, they're just not really people that, well, of course you have them on your roster because they're talented players who you want to do well. But at the same time, you've got to be cautious of, if you're going to play, then you're probably going to get a, you know, touches that 16 touches less than you should be getting, really, because of how bad Pittsburgh are in general.
I mean, it was just last week, Murph was talking about, we done a fair bit on Najee Harris's usage, and it was about, I think he was on for like the second most carries for a rookie in history. He was on target for all sorts of stuff. And it just said, look, just be careful, because if he's liable and prone to being injured with that kind of heavy usage.
Yeah.
And if the Steelers do fall out of contention, which with the defeat they suffered this week is looking more likely, they won't keep using him. They'll rest him. They'll sit him down. And Murph's top pickup, and something we've been talking about, is how to now put yourself in a position to go into the playoffs with confidence, and how to take dart throws or lottery tickets, if you will, with them roster spots at the bottom of your bench. And well, Murph's biggest recommendation last week was Benny Snell, because he says if the Steelers fall out of contention, they will sit Najee Harris, or his usage will drop considerably, and somebody like Benny Snell will come in. He said, if it's not going to cost you anything, if it's not going to hurt you, get it now, because in 2 weeks or 3 weeks' time, that may just be the acquisition you, rather than fighting on your waivers with little FAB left or little dollar spend left and everyone after the one guy that's coming in, you've got him sat on your bottom of your roster right now. So those guys that you're not using and not having, especially in a redraft league, take a dart throw. Get rid of your second QB that you don't need anymore. Get rid of your second tight end that you don't need anymore, because your starters are set and they've had their buys. And pick up dart throws like Benny Snell, because if something like Najee Harris and his usage goes down and they don't contend and they do decide to rest him, Benny Snell could have a significant role to play.
100%. And we've seen it from Snell the season anyway. So the fact that there's a bit of track record there, it makes it even more of a smarter play. So yeah, I can agree with that.
It does. And the other guy that Murph's been banging on about for probably, I've been doing this for 5 weeks now, and I think I have 4 of them, is Alexander Mattison.
Yeah, and obviously this comes to light with the Dalvin Cook injury, which, every season, a lot of analysts say this, but every season Cook picks up some sort of injury that rules him out for 1 or 2 games. Yep. Then we see the Mattison train come up again. You know, is he going to perform? Is he going to bust for people? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, regardless, if he's available, spend 100% of your fab on him. It doesn't matter. Like, he shouldn't be available anywhere, really. If he is available in your league is be less competitive than the most that I play in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if he is available, I'll be 100% getting him, because it's Minnesota at the end of the day, and they're going to run the ball a lot of the time.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Murph said. So we did a bit on these dart throws, are saying, so he mentioned wavering a week ahead of schedule. So taking those guys that an injury would take him into prime position.
Yeah.
So that you've got them, you're not fighting for them after. Like now, waiver wise, this week is going to be a full on competition trying to pick up Alexander Mattison.
Of course, yeah.
But it was spotting 100%. That opportunity a week or 2 weeks ago to say, hey, Dalvin Cook may not get injured, he may not get hurt, and this pickup of Mattison for free may not work out. But you know what? If you did it 2 or 3 weeks ago, you're sitting rather smugly right now with Alexander Mattison on your bench, ready to step in this week.
Yeah, I did exactly the same with Brandon Bolden a few weeks ago. We saw a few injuries go down, and Bolden came in, had a really good game, and he's on my bench, ready to go. So, yeah,
it seems like that's... Sorry, go on.
No, I was saying, it's just being prepared, like you were saying, with Mattison and myself with Bolden.
Yeah. We all know Dalvin Cook is going to miss some games, let's face it. He's always going to miss some games. It's just a matter of when. So I'm just having a look now. Mattison is owned on Sleeper and redraft in 55% of leagues. So there's nearly half the leagues out there with redraft where Alexander Mattison is available.
Yeah, which, grab him 100%.
Yeah, I think you need to be honest with you. He's going to be a pivotal person if you can get him on your roster if you haven't already. And he's fair in the receiving game as well, Madison, right? It does a job for you if you're looking for a flex play, especially week 12, week 13, 14. So 12 and 14, we've still got a couple of buys coming up on that.
Yeah, I was looking at the buys now. I mean, we've got the Panthers, Browns, Packers and Titans on buys. So some big teams there. They've got some big players. So you're going to need guys to fill in for you 100% no matter what roster you've got. So yeah, Madison, you know, Jennings, O'Shaughnessy, could be some guys that, you know, you need to bring them in for a week, see how they do, a bit of a dart throw, and hopefully it works out for you. And me.
And you. And me. I've given up with half of mine, but it is what it is, isn't it, right? So, Alexander Mattison, Murph's been banging the drum for a long time, and if you haven't got it, well, I'm actually quite glad he's not here, to be honest with you. We would not get the end of that, I'm sure. So, week 13 is obviously coming, as you said. Panthers are out, which is good because it might give Cam Newton a bit of time to work on his throwing action and his throwing ability, that's for sure. Perhaps. the Browns are out. Obviously, they brought Kareem Hunt back, but now he's got a nice long break. So you'd expect maybe week 14 that Chubb Hunt double team may go back to the way it was early in the season.
Yeah, and I was looking at they got the Ravens as well, who, to be fair, aren't as run defense as they were previously. So that could be quite an exciting game to watch again, of course, because I just watched it the other day.
Yeah. Packers, so a lot of people missing Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams. Aaron Jones got another week to get a little bit healthier as well. So, and the Titans, if you've got any Titans players, they're out injured anyway. So being on bye probably won't matter. Because there's not a lot of fantasy relevant Titans left, is there? Other than maybe Ryan Tannehill at this stage.
I mean, that Westbrook Aquino just seems to be staying relevant somehow. He needs to get the odd touchdown and just get 10 points out of nowhere. I don't know how he does it.
He does. I guess that's nice usage from the QB and that familiar thing. So you mentioned earlier you play a lot of DFS. Is that something you would target in DFS, that someone like Aquino, where you're going to get touchdown rather than yardage?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think with someone like Westbrook Aquino, it's usually around the $3,000 to $4,000 range, which for DraftKings, if anyone's not aware, is quite a low range. Because the minimum for a wide receiver is 3,000. So yeah, typically you're looking for, say he was 4,000 this week against New England. So you'd be looking for around a 10 to 12 point investment at the minimum for you to be like, you got value on your investment in terms of 4,000. So yeah, and of course, with a touchdown being worth 6, you know, yeah, a touchdown's getting you halfway there. So yeah, to be fair, you are looking for touchdowns. I'm not sure. I mean, me personally, I didn't look touchdowns his direction this week. Maybe that's where I went wrong. Maybe I should have gone there. But yeah, that ultimately, if you could find the cheaper player who is going to get you a touchdown and say 40 yards, you know, you're well on your way to, or at least making a start to having a winning roster. And then it all depends on what stacks you've gone for and if they're going to hit and what bringbacks have you got from that stack. And if they hit, and if they do, then you've got a pretty good chance of winning yourself some money.
I'm just going to grab you on something there because a lot of people listening might not know what you were on about. Obviously, we do have a DFS show on Thursdays, but
yeah,
you mentioned stacks and bringbacks. Talk us through that.
Of course.
What do you mean?
So, yes, I'm sure if you play best ball, you know what I'm on about. But if you don't play best ball, so example, for a stack that I would do typically this year, especially a San Francisco stack, I did it in quite a few big leagues like Scott Fishbowl, some other leagues also where I draft Jimmy Garoppolo as the QB, and I'd also draft Trey Lance because of I didn't know what's happening in that situation.
Yeah.
And then I go to George Kittle and Debo Samuel, and they complete the stack. So that'd be a three-headed stack in a sense. So I'd have the QB and his two pass catchers, and then I suppose San Francisco really wants to, you could go Elijah Mitchell or whoever it had been at the start of the season, probably Trey Sermon. So then you have your stack then, but in DFS terms, you have a bring back. Now a bring back could be a player from the other team who you think would benefit off the other team scoring a lot of points, because then they'd have increased opportunity to also score points. So, say, for example, this week, the Minnesota-San Francisco game is quite a key target for me. So I'd go Garoppolo at QB, then I'd have Mitchell and Deebo Samuel as my two sort of stacks to, with Garoppolo, and then bring back would be Adam Thielen, because Adam Thielen is it's a touchdown machine, does it every week. No one plays him because they just think he's terrible when he's not. And he's usually under 5% owned, and being under 5% owned usually gives you leverage over the rest of the field, which is what you want really to win big money. And of course, this week he did quite well. Usually, most weeks he does well targeting Minnesota because they've got a bad defense and a good offense. And so it evens itself out. And yeah, that's pretty much summary of it. You want to be stacking in DFS unless you're playing bigger tournament games anyway. If you're in you can get to cash and GPP games, but if you're in a cash game, which is typically a 20-man field, or you're paying like $5 entry, you don't really want to be sacking too much, maybe one player at the most. But yeah, definitely for tournament plays, when there's loads of like thousands and thousands of people in them, you want to be stacking and bringing back to give yourself the best chance of not only leverage, but also winning tournaments for sure.
Feels like a very boom bust type strategy to it, right?
Oh, 100%. I know a lot of us, we all chat in the DFS community about our strategies, and this season especially it's been very hard. I feel if you get into it this season and winning money, you're doing very, very well. It's been a very tough season, but there has been weeks where it's worked really well. And it's all about when you do win, you win quite significantly. And when you lose, you don't lose too much. So you sort of manage your bankroll, which I know Bestball UK Tom does really well in terms of how he manages his bankroll and explains it quite well. But yeah, it's all about that. It's all about not killing your bank in terms of that, and then managing it week to week and making sure you're managing it and gambling responsibly ultimately.
Obviously, we always recommend and endorse that. So where do running backs fit in that? Because there'd be an argument, I guess, normally that if a QB is going to do really well, then the chances are the running back isn't, unless it's a catching back necessarily. So would you look to do that, or would you try and go, I don't know, the team in the game you think will lead, take the running back because they'll be in the lead, and then take the QB and the receiver from the other side because they're going to have to throw the ball?
Yeah, I'm usually against that theory. I actually like playing running backs in my QB. Especially, well, with the offenses I like to target, typically the running backs are quite involved anyway. I kind of highlighted it in that example with Minnesota and San Francisco. Their two running backs are heavily involved in the offense regardless of the script. I'd like to talk teams like that. I mean, obviously Green Bay is a good example. You know, the way Dylan and Jones are involved in the offense, they're going to see touches and scores regardless of what the score is. And yeah, to be fair, I've heard people try and explain that theory to me in terms of how they think that would work. And I don't really understand it, because if your team's scoring, say, 40 points, your running back's going to get at least two scores. And we saw that with Fournette this week. And of course, Fournette ended up breaking the slate and getting loads of points, which probably won you or lost you your leagues. And I've even gone to the extent of playing two running backs in one game, especially in like Detroit games. Because Swift is so talented at running back. And I think, for example, the Browns game this season, and so is Nick Chubb. And then when there was no Kareem Hunt either. So the fact that you're getting like two really, really good talented running backs at really low ownership is, and they think they ended up getting like 50 plus points as well. So it was crazy. They returned value, you were getting leverage, and it was against all, supposed correlation. The thing is, the DFS, it's ultimately, especially with being a sort of tournament player rather than a cash player, it's all about breaking molds and not sticking to like trends and
differentiate
how you think it should be played, because ultimately you see within lineups every week that with $1 million and none of them are sticking to these rules. So
one won a big competition that I was in this week, and it had Myles Gaskin and Leonard Fournette, and I sat there and went, why on earth did you pick those two running backs in that lineup? Because to me, that Jackson wasn't there. They both performed, I guess. So
admittedly, I wouldn't play Gaskin. That's the thing. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you can go in. Like, I've seen people say, like, they look at everyone's tips who they think to play, they just don't play them, and they go over players. Maybe that's a bit crazy, but ultimately that's not the worst attitude to have, because you every week you see these winning million maker lineups with these random teams, and you know, how have they gone to that team? It's just probably because it's just trying stuff out, and there's no defined strategy to DraftKings or DFS, and that's what makes it so good.
I've gone into DFS a little bit last year and quite a bit more this year, and I've been told that you're better to be bottom because it means that those guys could have a breakout and you could be top, rather than being mid-table every single week and playing the floor. Play the ceiling, not the floor, a lot. So
yeah,
abysmal year, I'm saying it's going to turn. It's just around the corner, I'm sure.
The thing is, so, exactly, and you need 1 week to absolutely smash out of the park, and you'll be set for several seasons, hopefully, at least. I said to you, there's no like defined way of playing it. You can play it how you like, and no one can really say, "Oh, that's a bad play," because
Fournette and Miles Gaskin was a bad play this week, and that guy is now considerably wealthier than I am.
So, well, there you go. You said it for me,
Leo. Tell everyone listening, just before we do wrap up, where they can find more of your insights.
So Dolphin Abroad on Twitter, as you see at the bottom of the screen, or if you're listening, it's how you think you spell it. I do my writing for DraftKings. I'm lead DraftKings writer, King Fantasy Sports with Rich. I do weekly articles over there. Admittedly, it was two last week of the Thanksgiving slate, which could have gone better. But we do. I just go through my plays, my thoughts process, and hopefully help you win some money at the very least. And I'm always there for start sit questions and DraftKings lineup questions. So if you have any, just let me know. And if not, if I'm not there, then always go to Tom, Best Sport NFL UK as well, because he's helped me with lineups. I've helped him with lineups. So yeah, it's plenty of people to go to the community. But if it is me, then you know where I am.
Well, he helps me a lot of time in my lineups. I just run little odd bits by him. So when the wife does see the bank balance, I'm going to send her Tom's contact information. So, It's all on Tom. So,
at least you
don't
put
yourself in that bracket, Liam. You don't want to add yourself to that list, because you'll be in the crosshairs before you know it. So seriously, guys, I love following Liam on Twitter on his insights, and I always read it. It's good what he offers. Obviously, give him a friendly bit of luck as well in SFB, because he is representing for the UK from here and doing very well. So best of luck from me to you, mate, and all here at Five Yard. And I hope that continues, and I hope you can bring it back for us, because that'd be something exceptional to do.
Yeah, thank you very much. And hopefully, if it's not me, it's one of us from the UK for sure.
There's a few of them doing well, isn't there? There's a few of them that are...
Yes, yeah. Of course, Rich's doing well, isn't he? So.
Yeah, Rich is doing well. I think Ali's looking around.
Ali's doing well, so yeah.
There's a few of us there, so... Just before we do go, Tuesday, guys, is the Dynasty Show with Rich and Liam. Wednesday, College and IDP guys will be along. Thursday is our own DFS show, so listen in if you'd like the little insight Liam's give us today. And then Friday will be the Matchups Pod. We had a fan team contest last week. I can't tell you who won because I've been too busy to look today, and I'm not sure if it's back next week. So listen in on Thursday, and they'll give you a bit more on that. Liam, anything else before we call it a day, sir?
No, not from me. Nothing, mate. Not at all.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining me. I appreciate the time. Thanks for you that are listening and watching. And as Murph would always say, keep rushing. Cheers, guys.